The greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world he didn't exist.
I saw a pale horse,
the beast,
foretold in the book of Revelation.
This is not a human child.
Isn't an angel?
Satan! Armageddon is almost upon us.
Order the use of nuclear weapons.
The world is a fine place and worth fighting for.
From one end of the world to the other, I will oppose you.
Welcome to the end of the world.
Wrestling not against flesh and blood, but against powers and principalities. This is PID Radio.
On a gray day in the heartland of America, I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert, and welcome to our humble bunker, everybody. Let's see, today's August the 9th.
Mm-hmm.
Of 2013.
And this is your Friday wrap-up of all the news that's that we think is news. And we'll let you decide whether that has any importance.
And they shut the dial now.
That's right.
Just
okay.
Go
back to the guys in marketing for a better opening next damn Monday. Well, some interesting things out here. And this is a piece of news based on a piece of wood found on the other side of the planet that would normally, I think, attract a lot of attention, but I think skepticism is sort of the order of the day on this one. My question is whether this makes any difference whether it's real or not. Archaeologists working in Turkey believed they have actually found a piece of the true cross.
How large is this?
It is about the size of a, how big is it? Well, you know, the archaeologists have found an artifact in a chest, a stone chest. The little stone chest is about the size of a 16-inch softball, apparently.
Hmm.
But they say it's going to take years of tests before they can know for sure.
How do they verify that it was a piece of the true cross?
That's my question. Even if they run years of tests on this thing, how are they going to verify whether
it's
a true cross?
We're going to compare it to every artifact across the globe
that's right.
You know, that people purport to be a piece of the true cross.
And by the time you've got that, you'll have enough to build the ark. Oh, we found
it. It's gopher wood.
Yeah. So I don't know. The question I have, though, is whether this, even if they were able somehow, and I don't imagine there's any way that this could be done, but if they were somehow able to prove that this was, in fact, a piece of the cross on which Jesus of Nazareth was crucified, would it make any difference to Christians? Or should it make any difference?
No.
That's my thought.
No.
That's my thought. No difference whatsoever. We don't worship the cross. We don't worship any artifact. I mean, it'd be kind of neat if we could see it and say, you know, hey, that's, you know, powerful.
Mm-hmm.
But the old rugged cross is not the object of our veneration.
No, it is not. And I would say it's very strong possibility that it was reused.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. Because the Romans...
They crucified somebody every day.
Yeah.
Oh, time after time.
Oh, this is some guy the high priests wanted to get rid of. We don't really care. Hey, he had a nice cloak, though.
I mean, the fact is that some of the Roman soldiers did become believers, but not the next day. So I'd say it's very likely that it got reused.
Mm-hmm. So the piece of wood discovered in a small stone chest on the site of a church in Turkey that was built about 660 A.D. And interesting, by the way, that the CBS TV affiliate in Pittsburgh used AD instead of BCE or CE rather.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cause almost all of them use CD. Well, CE,
which still stands
CDs.
For Christian era, as far as I'm concerned.
Amen.
Yeah. It's Jesus still divides time.
Mm-hmm.
So whether you call it AD
Anno
or CE.
Domini.
Yes. The church has frescoes on its walls depicting Jesus, Mary, and the apostles. Researchers don't know who owned the chest, but it was somebody who was of some importance, a religious person of some importance, and that person apparently believed that the cross relic was the real deal. So all they really know is it dates from the 7th century, and somebody believed that they had a fragment of the true cross. So, like I said, even if it's a real deal, doesn't matter.
It is an interesting story, though.
Yes, it is. So, there was one that popped up this afternoon that kind of took both of us by surprise from your old stomping grounds.
Stone box from the 7th century AD?
Well, no, a kind of a local story about a religious man who impacted a lot of lives.
You know, when you told me that you had seen a story about an Amish quote-unquote healer, and really that is perhaps not the best way to to describe him, because he wasn't a faith healer.
Right.
He was a healer who had great faith in God.
That's right.
I never met him. I just had a former friend and teacher from the Madison area who knew him well.
Mm-hmm. And by Madison, just for clarification, we mean
Madison, Indiana.
The real one, not that fake
one. Not that fake one up in Wisconsin.
Yeah. So the gentleman's name was Solomon Wicki. He was 75. He passed away Monday, August 5th.
I thought you said he was 92.
Nope, 75.
Oh, he was only 75?
Mm-hmm. According to his obituary.
I hadn't realized he was that much, that close to my own age. I always pictured him. I told you this when my friend John would tell the story of going to visit his friend Solomon Wicki, who was an iridologist. He would study the iris of your eye, and he would determine exactly what was wrong with you. And he was, according to John, who was an anatomy and physiology teacher, went on later to get his master's in physiology. He knew a little bit about the body, and he trusted this guy.
Hmm.
According to John, his description, I always pictured, you know that movie that we watched, Pumpkinhead?
Yes,
okay,
yes.
Picture a male version of that. Out in the woods.
And Holly.
I always pictured, you know, this stately gentleman, but out in the middle of the woods, you know, that, okay, this is what's wrong with you. Here's your bag of tea, you know, and that'll be at four chickens, you know, that kind of thing. But he sounds like he was a wonderful man. I'm sorry I never got to meet him.
He, according to the story from the Journal Gazette in Fort Wayne, Indiana, and by the way, there's some sites on the internet that are incorrectly identifying the place of Mr. Wicki's
passing
as Georgia, because DeKalb County, Georgia is better known than DeKalb County, Indiana.
Exactly.
There are lots of DeKalb counties. Apparently, the Baron DeKalb was a Revolutionary War hero. And so many states east of the Mississippi have, just like there's a Shelbyville named for Isaac Shelby.
Exactly. And it depends. Do you pronounce it DeKalb or do you pronounce it DeKalb? Which is how I grew up pronouncing it.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, around Chicago, it's DeKalb County to the west of Chicago.
What do you know?
Northern Illinois
Chicago.
University is DeKalb. Yeah.
You
so
guys, you know.
He was in. Yeah,
that's you can't even, you know, win a baseball game.
Not this year. Cubs or White Sox.
Oh, honey,
year.
That was a low blow. I'm
that's,
sorry.
No, it's fair and accurate. Mr. Wicki was 75 years old. I love you too, sweetheart. I do not measure my self-worth by where the Cubs are in the standings.
I know you don't, yes. But I just want to remind you that I love you very much. And for those who don't know, since you're not seeing this, Derek is wearing an IU t-shirt.
That's true. That's true. Not U of I, which would be Illinois.
Right.
Yeah. Solomon Wicki, he passed in DeKalb County, Indiana, which is south of Fort Wayne. But he did spend time in the Madison area, according to the article here. Back in the early 1980s, he lived in, was it Bern, Indiana? Berne?
Yeah.
On U.S. 27. And the Indiana State's attorney, south of Decatur, of which there is also one in Illinois. This is so confusing. He was the victim of a suit filed by the state of Indiana. They wanted to file charges against him for practicing medicine without a license. And his response was, look, I'm not claiming to be a doctor and I don't charge for my services. I don't take money. So they moved to Madison at that point and then eventually came back and settled in DeKalb County. And he was apparently well enough known that the New York Times wrote an article about him in 1981, and there was a book about him called Solomon's Touch.
How about that?
Old Order Amish, but interesting. The media does identify him as a faith healer, which just shows how much understanding most of the mainstream media has about people of faith.
They thought he was in Georgia too. Right. They don't pay any attention.
Well, it's interesting. There's a blog that I look at from time to time called Get Religion, which is so named because the contributors are people who work for the mainstream media. They work for television stations, newspapers, and so forth. But they named the blog Get Religion because they understand and recognize that the media just doesn't get religion. So, in this case, it seems the headline writer at least didn't quite get the gist of what Mr. Wicki was trying to do.
Just trying to write my little piece and get out of here. Well, you know, speaking of Indiana, we'll just go to another story. How about that?
Sounds good.
Speaking of Indiana, the county fairs that take place every year across Indiana, across the Midwest, have shown a number of H3N2 swine flu cases again. It's been year after year. It just doesn't get into the news as much. Well, Illinois now has a swine flu case that matches one that was in Grant County in Indiana.
Oh.
And according to Henry Nyman, he thinks that these are all connected.
Hmm. You know, this is triggering a little bit of a memory. We don't usually go to the county fair here in Coles County, Illinois, even though it's only about 2 miles north of here. We can hear the tractor pulls.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Suddenly from the north side of town, you're...
Those are just the pigs.
I'm from Chicago. What do I know? But it seemed to me that... a year ago, and in fact, it was just about this time a year ago, last August 11th, the local paper was writing stories about cases of swine flu at the Coles County Fair. So it is.
Well, yeah, I mean, and at this point, it isn't just the county fairs; the state fairs are taking place right about now.
Right. Yes. So what is the significance that Dr. Nyman sees in connecting these cases?
That well, it's transmitted human to human. I think he sees. If I understand what he's written here, he often refers to a lot of clads and things like that. So he gets into a lot of geek speak. But my understanding, if I get him, is that he fears that we're sort of on a building up steam here. Toward it becoming more and more communicable, and whether or not it becomes a real problem. Let's just put it that way. Because in a few years ago, the first few cases that we had were young children for the most part, and they became very ill. And I think one or two died. So I don't know. But speaking of the flu, well, there's Sam. He just came out from underneath his blanket. He said, pigs. Where are the pigs?
Yeah.
I likes the pigs.
It's my natural prey.
Speaking of that, the H7N9 bird flu that has been going around China for the last year or more is also picking up steam and picking up some ink, well, digital ink, in the press. There was a story out yesterday, which I just think is insane. No, actually, it's dated today, August 9th. A group of scientists are proposing to conduct controversial experiments on the new H7N9 bird flu virus that may involve creating more potent strains to examine how they might spread among humans. Well, you know, it's spreading well enough among humans without a whole lot of intervention. And the death rate is relatively high. As I remember, it's at least 20, if not 50%, depending on who's reporting it.
Wow.
So, oh yeah, I've been following H7N9 for a while. It's China keeps saying, no, these are only people who have been around poultry, but that's not true. If you really read the stories, you'll see that many of these people aren't around poultry at all. We're talking about not eating chickens, but actually raising them or going to markets and buying them, you know, where they have the live chickens there and you just have them kill them. These are actually... clusters that are taking place in families. And again, Henry Nyman is really doing a great job on following up on all of this. Henry Nyman, by the way, Dr. Henry Nyman is from recombinomics.com. Mm-hmm. He knows his stuff. He knows way more than I ever do about genetics. And kudos to him for following up on this. I just think it's crazy, but I love this story here. A professor at University in Minnesota, Michael Osterholm, was asked about what is this dangerous? You know, should we do this? And he said, well,
Sam is feels very strongly about this. Yeah,
I know. He says, well, I don't think terrorists would want to make use of the research to make weapons because it's complicated work and it'd be too much trouble. Now, mind you, that's not in quotes. That's the last paragraph that wasn't in quotes. So I think he's being paraphrased. Mm-hmm. But if that's his sentiment, then I wonder, you know.
Look up the definition of zealot, Professor.
Exactly. Yeah. And zealots aren't all, you know, just guys sitting around, you know, trying to figure out what they want to do in their lives. Some of them are very well educated. Some of them are men of science.
Yeah. And you say the death rate on this is running from anywhere from 20 to 50%?
It depends on how it's reported. And China, you know, they say, oh, well, you know, quite a number of the he's not happy. Quite a number of the people died in this family or in this hospital because they were very ill to begin with. And there's a certain amount of truth in that it seems to be people who are a little bit health compromised to start with who, you know, the H7N9, I don't have the story in front of me, but as I recall, it has a very singular presence in the lungs. In other words, the lung tissue has a unique look compared to any other bird flu that's going around. If you think H5N1 was bad, if H7N9 becomes highly communicable, mm-hmm. it will make the Spanish flu look like a walk in the park.
Yeah, I was just trying to look up while you were talking there about the mortality rate from the 1918-1919 pandemic, and it's not, they have to estimate it. They don't really know.
They think it may have been 5%.
Yeah.
But I've seen as high as 20.
Yeah, case fatality rate, depending on who you ask, anywhere from 2.5% to 10%. But that means, you know, 3% to 6% of the entire world's population died.
And many people got very, very ill.
Right.
It affects a lot of people. Well, it's hard to say what's going to happen. China doesn't want the world to know that there's a sort of crisis taking place. This is typical. Honestly, if it were going on here in the United States, we wouldn't want the world to know either, because you want commerce to continue and people won't fly into your area and buy your goods if it looks like they're contaminated.
Exactly, yes. Could be devastating. So,
There's a European country, and I'm trying to remember which one it is, if it's the Netherlands, or there's a country that just had an outbreak in Europe, one case of H7N9 that doesn't seem to be linked to China. And now, what country was it? India? There's another country that says, we're no longer going to take any chickens from you. No birds come from you. Yeah. Because this is scary.
You know, this is on a small scale. It's like, and we've referred to this periodically, the plot of the novel Dead Stock mm-hmm. by Kate Iola. Which is the pen name of a researcher named Katie Thompson, who looks into food security issues and has spoken on that. Interviewed her a couple of times. Haven't talked with her in about 6 years, but
should give her a call.
The novel is frightening because it's very plausible, and she paints a scenario in the novel in which a few bags of animal manure infected with hoof and mouth disease thrown into some feedlots in the Midwest. taking advantage of the prevailing winds across Iowa and Illinois could devastate the American agriculture industry and our economy, which is a lot more dependent on the ag industry than we'd like to think. Even the industry in which I work is heavily affected by agriculture. I can tell you there's certain areas in the state where steel sales aren't what we would like them to be, because there aren't the orders for big pieces of farm equipment going to companies like John Deere and Case New Holland that we would like to see. So, this could be devastating in a bigger scale. I mean, if just one case is having an impact on the ag economy in a European nation, imagine what would happen if suddenly it came out that hoof and mouth, which hasn't been seen in the United States in 90 years, were to get out. Something like
time.
I think it's like, I think 1920s was the last time it came out. So,
well, officially,
yeah.
Again, governments don't want you to know.
Exactly. Speaking of unusual deaths, you pointed out this story earlier. Scientists are investigating a number of dead bottlenose dolphins on the east coast of the United States. Carcasses showing up at a rate they say is about 7 times higher than usual. More than 120 dead animals discovered since June on shores from New Jersey to Virginia.
Now, these are only animals that have washed up, right?
That's correct. So we don't know about the ones that have not washed ashore. I guess that's the only measure we have. There are some potential explanations: algae blooms, infectious viruses, human-made runoff, mm-hmm. things like that. Cause has not yet been determined, but early tissue analysis says it could be something called the Morbilla virus, which is an infectious pathogen.
Right, that's what it was, 10 years ago or something like that?
Yeah.
The last time that there was a large number of deaths.
Actually 25 years.
Oh.
Yeah, 1987. 740 dolphins died of Morbilla virus on the coast from New Jersey to Florida. So the public on the East Coast asked not to approach the animals.
I think that's just a healthy thing anyway. If you see a dead animal, don't assume that you know why it died.
Yeah.
Leave it alone. Report it to the local, I suppose it'd be the
yes.
park service or, well, probably call the animal shelter first and ask them.
Yeah. Yeah, not something you want to take in your own touch or take upon yourself. What else? Getting into the area of faith, I guess, or at least circling back around to it. There's an organization that purports to be scientific or engaged in social good works that is in fact just trying to pull people into a cult. Narconon. Narconon, which presents itself as a system to get people out of drug addictions, is just an outreach of the Church of Scientology, and they have lost their certification in the state of Oklahoma. Several people have died in recent months at a clinic in Arrowhead, Oklahoma. And this is just an ongoing trend, it seems. The Church of Scientology is taking some hits in the court of public opinion, but also governments are kicking them out of overseas in Europe. There are a couple of nations that have kicked Narconon out because of its ties to Scientology. But here in the United States, they try to weasel their way in through. No, forgive me. That's a loaded word. They try to use the outreach to people who need help as a means of drawing them into their belief system. I think that's a fair way of saying it. And I suppose there are critics who say that we Christians try to do the same thing by feeding the hungry and you know providing housing and shelter to the poor and hungry as Jesus Christ commanded us to do.
I think there's a difference, though. If you hand a sandwich to someone and say, you know, just here you go, Jesus loves you. That's one thing.
Yeah.
If you bring someone in for counseling and then actually end up trying to alter their thinking patterns through, because Scientology has some very rigorous ways to alter your thinking patterns.
Yeah. And doing so and presenting themselves as experts in an area, drug counseling, drug addiction counseling, where there are people who need people who are well trained and may have some medical training as well. That is something that the state of Oklahoma has apparently determined is not going to tolerate any further. And, the news source, the local paper in Oklahoma reporting the story, did try to contact Narconon for a comment and did not receive a reply, at least as of the time of this recording. So,
You know, this is a total left turn, totally different kind of story.
Well, good, because that one's kind of depressing.
Well, it kind of is, but honestly, this one is too, because it takes us to, it could be into the prophetic realm. Five people have been killed in explosions in Egypt. This is according to Reuters. I love this app. If you have a tablet, the app that I have for News 360, I love it because you can look at the story and see all the different sources up here.
Oh, yeah.
You can read their version of that same story.
Oh, yeah, and then just compare and contrast
exactly.
The reporting.
So
yeah.
Reuters says, Cairo, five Islamist militants were killed in an explosion south of the Egyptian city of Rafah near the border with Israel on Friday. The state news agency MENA said, M-E-N-A. Now I go over to the Jerusalem Post. The IDF coordinated attack with Egyptian authorities. Egyptian army's sources say the strike comes after the drone strike, by the way, comes after the IDF ordered closure of Eilat Airport for 2 hours on Thursday, reportedly due to Egyptian intel of jihadist plans to attack Israel. What I have read at other sources says that Cairo is not giving Israel the credit. They are just saying there was an explosion on the ground. Five people are dead.
They probably are doing that because they don't want to inflame problems or tensions with their next door neighbor who
is this area
is
in the Sinai,
which is on Israel's border. Yeah,
it is. And this is supposed to be an area that has technically been part of the peace accord from many, many years ago. And it's supposed to be sort of a a central peaceful zone that nobody really does. You're not supposed to make any war at all in the Sinai, and yet here they send some drones in. So I'm wondering what the IDF knew, what happened, what the men on the ground were actually involved in. They supposedly had military? Sorry, I've gone away from the story now. What am I trying to say? They had a weapon on the ground that they were using to...
Anti-aircraft missile?
Yes, thank you. It was a dachshund. Snarling, slathering.
Sun-worshipping dog launchers?
You know, if you could launch a dachshund, it would end all wars. Yeah. That would be the mother of all, you know.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, I was out today and on a call and met a gentleman who, with his wife, foster dogs that are in need of homes while permanent homes are located for these rescue dogs. And they have had a number of dachshunds come through their home. And he said they tend to be rather confident, don't they? I said, yeah, confident is a good word. And Sam is wagging his tail at that one.
Say, yeah. Confident. Come over here. Get underneath your banking.
So not necessarily the best dog for a home with small children. Kids look at dachshunds and think, oh, look, they're so cute. Oh, look at the puppy. Look at the puppy. And they go grabbing at their faces. And you know, dachshunds are bred to go into holes after badgers, which are snarling, ravenous
bladder beasts.
So a dachshund needs to be confident. It needs to have the attitude of a United States Marine when it goes down that hole. That and a strong, lengthy tail to pull him back out when he gets the badger.
Well, so, you got that right. I'm trying to find the link that I don't know how much more time we have in the show, but there is a conference taking place in September.
I think that's a good way to end the show, actually.
You really, really need to consider attending if you're anywhere in the area. Minneapolis is where it's taking place. The only thing that I have right here is the video, and I don't want to have to, because if I hit that, it'll start playing.
Well, let me see if I can call it up here. Is it the Minneapolis Underground Conference?
It is indeed.
Yes, Minneapolis Underground Summit, which is, and I'll probably wind up bringing it up here. Let me just mute this just in case.
Yeah.
Mute. September 27th and 28th at the Hotel Sofitel, S-O-F-I-T-E-L, in Minneapolis. There's probably everyone else knows how to pronounce it but me. The speakers it should be a great conference. The speakers, main speakers, Doug Woodward, Russ Dizdar, and Rob Skiba.
And there are more if you go on down.
Right.
At the page. Yeah, it looks like it's going to be a wonderful event. I got a note from someone who's one among the planners, Marjorie Cole, and she asked me to pass along that if all goes well, they're hoping to do this again next year. So if you cannot make it this year, plan on next year.
So the website is musummit.com. I'll put a link to that in the show notes at pidradio.com. musummit.com, September 27th and 28th in Minneapolis. So awesome. It looks like a great weekend. Well, our weekend here.
We're going to do some painting and cutting the grass and possibly some other stuff. It all depends on what our dachshund tells us we have to do.
That's it. but that's all right. He more than repays us he moves at our speed. I think that you were more simpatico with Sam than with
I'm built more like a dachshund, short legs, a little on the chunky side, long ears.
Knacks and snaps. He moves at our speed. Until Monday, I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert. Bye-bye, everybody.
Thanks for listening. PID Radio is a production of the PID Radio Network, a division of Gilbert House. Please visit our website at PIDradio.com, where you'll find show notes and links to connect with us on Twitter and Facebook. We wish to thank all those who help undergird and underwrite our ministry through prayers, feedback, and donations. To contact us directly, email us at radio@peeringintodarkness.com. Opening music adapted from The Alchemist's Tower by Kevin MacLeod, www.incompetech.com. Closing music, New Day Coming by Steve Grace, stevegrace.com. Content, copyright Gilbert House, and is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derives 3.0 Unported License. For more information, see creativecommons.org.
Gonna step up to the microphone, say it loud and clear. A better day is coming soon. get us out of here. A new